Hello, welcome to Brat Life. My name's Angel. This week's episode is with Logan Kiddock. He's a rider and racer out of D23 in Minnesota, and he's got a little bit of an interesting story. So when I met him, he was traveling around the country, and he was doing races all over. But I knew of his reputation back in Minnesota because one of my friends trained with him. So it was really cool to sit down and get to talk with him and kind of hear about how his life is settling down a little bit. But it's never a bad thing, just a little bit different. So I hope you guys really like this episode, and I'll see you next week.
All right. Well, welcome to Brap Life. I appreciate the fact that you took time out of your schedule to come in here because we've been trying to do this for a couple months now. And you're super busy all the time, so would you like to introduce yourself and kind of say a little bit about who you are, what you race, and all that?
My name is Logan Kiddock, a local racer here from Minnesota. I race Air Scramble Enduro Series, and yeah, I spent many years racing nationals, and we're settling down now and staying home. So not so much going on anymore.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, you did some really cool stuff. I've been watching your career for a couple years, and so it's kind of cool to see all the stuff that you've done. But it's also cool to see you be a family guy too. So, well, with that, how did you get started in riding in general?
Throw it back to about 3 years old. So that'd be 22 years ago. I got a PW50 and rode around in the yard for a little bit. Grandpa and grandma made me a little loop at their house, which was a woods loop. So that's kind of how we got started in that direction. Raced motocross, like fair races, stuff like that. So not actual like District 23 motocross. And then gave our hand at a hair scramble in 2009 and never looked back from there. So kind of led us to where we're at today.
So what made you decide to do that hair scramble?
I think it was, I don't even know what caused us to do the hair scramble. Maybe it was recommended to us from somebody. Grandparents had a woods loop, so maybe that was what kind of set it off to go try a woods race. But an official answer, I couldn't give you one. But I believe my parents kind of asked us, what do you guys think about, you know, that hair scramble that we just did? And we all liked it. We all had fun. And so in 2010, we decided to do the full District 23 hair scramble and enduro series. So
that's awesome. And how did that year go for you?
I would have been in the Pee Wee class, which is 65s. And I was third in the end of the season behind Colin Maynard and Colton Reschke.
So. So you did pretty good right away.
Yep, decent.
That's good. And what was your progression like from there?
The following year I was on 85, and I did, I think, one race in the 85 class, and then I went and raced 200C on the 85 for the following year and a couple more events. And then I was stuck kind of racing that those same three guys. I was always behind them. And then same thing happened in B class. Those same guys, you know, they were on 125s. I ended up getting a 125 that following season for B class. And then never really made too much progression until I went to A class. Took the jump. We got our suspension done on the bike for the first time. And ran 200A, and we did fairly well. I got the championship in enduro and hair scramble, had some pretty good overall finishes, and went to AA. It was about mid-season at Brookston that year. Spent a year and a half in AA before I got my first two championships, and then I started taking this seriously. So
what changed in your program when you started to take it more serious? Was it like, were you starting to train like off the bike? Were you changing nutrition? Like, what did that look like? Or was it just more time on the bike?
I always had plenty of time on the bike. What really changed was I met a guy named Jonathan Jensen. He owns CrossFit 585 in Apple Valley. And he came out and rode with us. I can't remember the connection on how he ended up coming out, but he's like, hey, why don't you come visit me at the gym? And one thing led to another, and next thing you know, we were training full time, and he had me eating pretty good. He had, you know, training every single day. I always had plenty of time on the bike. My bikes were always worn out. So that's kind of what changed it, and it'll change it for anybody, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. I found that when I started working out more, my riding improved a lot faster. And then when I started changing my nutrition, so for me personally, what worked was adding more protein into my diet. And it helped my endurance in general. So I was able to go further distances. I was able to go harder. And I just thought that was really cool. So I always like to know kind of like what works for different people. We have a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are new to training or to nutrition. They're just starting to get interested in racing. So I always like to ask and kind of see what people are into, get a look at like, what does race week look like? Like when you're heading into a big race, especially, you know, being in Minnesota, you don't get to train all winter long like some people do. So that's kind of hard. So leading up into the race, like the first race of the year, what does that look like for you?
I've always done a good job while heading south training. So this has probably been my slowest winter since about 2015. I've only ridden three times this winter. Normally I'd be on the bike every weekend, whether it was the indoor arena, weekend practices, or like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night practice. You know, usually try to do those once a week in the past. And then I was normally down in Oklahoma a bunch with buddies and just always found a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what my winter riding kind of looked like. But most of the time I was in the gym every day in the winter time as well. Slacking this year, but that's all right. So,
yeah. So, what bike do you run now?
I am on a Triumph this year. Triumph 250. Awesome. Yep.
That's great. So, how did that deal come about?
I don't officially know how. The guys at Red River reached out to me and talked to me about running one. And it was kind of in discussion for a couple months. And then it was kind of tail end of the year, November, December. And we finally got everything finalized. And they got me a demo bike to ride. And it's been excellent. So I really look forward to racing it this year.
That's really cool. What do you see as a difference so far, at least on your limited time on the bike? What's the biggest difference or what do you like about it?
I think a big jump was going back to the four stroke from the two short previous 2 years I was on the Riehu 250. So that's kind of a big jump there. And we just got it set up perfect right away. And normally I struggle with bike setup. It normally takes, you know, 6, 7, 8 suspension setups and we got it dialed. This one was like right off the bat. I was happy with it and swapped the rear sprocket to a larger tooth and it's ready to go. So it was easy. I think it's just nice. It's all around good bike. So that makes it real easy to work with.
That's good. And it's all, you're all ready, like mentally, are you all ready for the season to start?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm always ready. So
when is the first race?
First race will be the Appleton Border Battle. And I believe last weekend of April or first weekend of May.
Okay. So it's coming up pretty quick.
Yep. I'll just be racing locals in the Border Battle series this year. So keeping it easy. Nice.
That'll be fun.
Yep.
Well, of all of the races that you have done across the country, what was your favorite venue to go to?
Oh, in 2019, I did majority of the GNCCs. I had a blast at Snowshoe that year. snowshoe GNCC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just everything just clicked that day. We had a stressful Saturday, got out there and bike would not run well at all just because of the jetting changes that were required for elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Late Saturday night phone call with guys at Fine Tune, got that set up. We made some suspension adjustments and
mm-hmm.
everything just worked well Sunday. I mean, when things go smooth, you just always have fun. And we put down a pretty good lead that next day. And so that goes down in the books as probably one of the most successful days and probably one of the most fun days racing.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anywhere that you haven't been yet that you do want to go ride?
Anywhere west.
Oh, yeah?
Like anywhere west. Desert races. I think my brother and I, we've been talking about Min 400, Vegas, Reno. I've never had the bike to go out and do it. So we're kind of waiting for the day until I get that all set up and we can go do one of those. But I rode that Texas National Enduro they had. Can't remember. Mm-hmm. Turkey, Texas. That was a really cool event. Conditions weren't very good. It was very dusty. but it was just a cool race. You know, something I've never seen before. Nothing I've ever raced. And when you get exposed to something new, it's always fun.
Especially in a race setting. Like, mm-hmm. I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. I went from East Coast to West Coast just a couple months ago. And,
mm-hmm.
like, it's completely different riding. And it's taken me a little bit to get used to it. So I can't imagine, especially at your pace, like, going into that kind of blind and just, like, having to figure it out on the go. That's really a testament to, like,
the most skill. Difficult part was actually paying attention to the trail and not looking at the scenery there. You come across a hill and you could just, you know, see for miles. And it's like, you want to look, but at the same time, you're racing.
I kind of get that. I was in Utah this last weekend when we got up onto a mesa and I was struggling. It was very scary for me. But when we got up top, I really wanted to look out because I knew we were really high and I knew it was going to be really pretty. But I was at the same time, I was like, for my skill level, I can't do that and not like move my bike a little bit. And we're right on the edge. So I was like, I just gotta stay looking straight.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's similar scenery, but I can go west, do a race here in the next couple of years, that's kind of on the bucket list now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I'm sure it'll happen. I mean, you've got the skill and, you know, you've got backing. So I'm sure you guys will figure it out and you'll get out here for one of the races. It'll be cool. Yeah.
Might have to talk to the guys at Red River and get a 450 to use.
Yeah, there you go. Well, what about in the entire world? If you could go anywhere in the world and it was completely paid for, where would you go?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I could put a location on it. You know, there's so many cool races in Europe. I'm sure there's cool races everywhere. ISD every year looks pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anywhere new, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a tough one to answer.
Well, usually this is a lot more geared towards hard enduro and like so people are always like there's three main races that people will say and it's just so it's kind of different to like hear a different perspective sometimes. We don't have a ton of people who aren't hard enduro, but I like to hear what people say and
which one that they're shooting for. Erzberg is probably one of them.
Erzberg.
Yeah.
Sea to Sky is actually the most popular one. That one's out in Turkey. So and that one is just absolutely epic. And I think almost every single person has said Sea to Sky or Erzberg. And then of course Romaniacs, because those are like the really big ones. So
I've watched plenty of them. I've raced a couple. They're hard enduros to me, but like the Mad Moose in Michigan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a hard enduro on the series 1 year, I believe. And then Revlimiter I've done two or three times down there in northern Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So I always had the ambitions to get to TKO, but never did it.
How did you like the hard enduro versus what you normally do?
I will go ride extreme enduro and hard enduro, like out in the mountains. I'll go do that stuff any day, but I don't have any interest racing it now.
Yeah.
It was a unique experience, and I don't like being rushed through those obstacles. So the
I could
racing,
definitely see that.
it's incredible what those guys can do. And when people watch it online, it doesn't do any justice to what they're actually doing. So it's impressive. If I was to go to TKO, I'd probably just watch, honestly. Or, any extreme enduro, I'd just rather watch them just because of how impressive it is.
Yeah, it really is. I got to go to TKO this last year, and it was just so cool to see it in person because I've been watching it for several years, and so it was so cool because I was like, I kind of know this, like I remember watching this, like so yeah, it was totally epic. But then everybody was here from Europe, and seeing those guys too on top of our pros and everybody just fly through some of these sections was just absolutely insane.
I remember we used to have a video of a hard enduro down in Texas. It was like on a movie, like a national disc, Last Man Standing. So I remember watching that when I was younger, and that's kind of what got the interest started. And I raced a couple of them, but then I got started with racing GNCC, and now I'd rather watch those guys.
It's a very different kind of riding, but it's I mean I'm crazy because I want to do that, but yeah, everybody's a little bit different and everybody's got a little bit of a different kind of crazy. So to ride dirt bikes in general, you have to be a little bit crazy because who wants to go and fall? We all fall in the beginning. So like who wants to go fall all the time and then keep going, keep pushing? And then when you start to get into stuff like hard enduro, like you're falling a lot more when you're learning.
That's
And
right.
so it takes that crazy to the next level. But or as Webb says, he's like, oh, maybe we're just dumb. And I was like, yeah, I mean we could be, but
Don't know if I would say that. Crazy is the term. I
yeah, I
remember,
mean
I was at that rev limiter. I think Cody Webb won it the 1 year. I was in the afternoon race and I was sick. So I was really struggling. And the entire A class, we were on like the third or fourth signature obstacle. And I think it was like a 7 mile lap or 6 mile lap. And like our entire group, our entire line we started with was like picking our way through these obstacles. And so we were maybe a quarter of the way through the lap, and Cody Webb comes flying by us, lapping us already. I'm like, this is just unreal. And there's 35 guys stuck on this hill. I was probably 17 or 18 at the time. And he just snakes his way right through everybody. And I was like, how are you even getting traction here? How do you balance your bike up this and jump that 6 foot ledge at the top with no run up? Like, it's insane. It doesn't even seem real.
Yeah, there are some of the guys that I've ridden with like out west here, and it's insane. They're not even pro level. They could be, in my opinion. But they're insane. They're doing stuff like that, and it's just like what? Like where does that come from? But then at the same time, like it's time on the bike and it's really dedicating yourself to improvement and all of that, because I look at the stuff that I'm doing now, and 6 months ago, I wouldn't even have looked at 90% of what I've been doing in the last 2 months. So, like, the like how much you can improve is really up to like how much you're dedicated to pushing yourself. So,
That's
like,
right.
I know that there's a limit eventually, but where those guys are at and where I'm at is like two hugely different things. And so I have like plenty of ways to go to get to where they're at. But they're constantly improving too. I mean, they're constantly pushing the envelope on what can be done, and they're doing some insane things. And it's a little scary to watch them sometimes.
Yeah, that's kind of happening in honestly all racing right now. Everything's getting further and further along.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the progression as bikes, like the technology for them gets better, everything can just get pushed to the next level.
I'd see that. I guess I don't know who would be your top guy, Tristan Hart in Hart Enduro. I've heard great things about like his ability on the bike. You got Jet Lawrence going in the motocross and supercross right now. Kind of your, I won't say a top guy, but he's kind of, he looks like he's going to be for sure. Obviously, he went undefeated. And then, you know, Caleb Russell, in off-road, he just came back, but I mean, he had 8 championships straight. That's just impressive.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy what these guys, like, it's almost robotic. I mean, that's what they call Tristan. They call him the robot.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost robotic. Like how they've gotten things down to like such a science to just be able to do it. I mean, look at the way Manny Lettenbickler goes through stuff. I mean, Manny and Tristan battled at TKO, but it was insane when he finally passed Tristan in the section that I was in, and he just flowed through everything so differently. And I was like, oh my God, like that's insane. Cause I mean, when Tristan goes by me, I'm just like floored usually, but then Manny going past him and like almost leaving him behind at that point, and I was like, oh my God, how do you even do that? Like, it's insane.
Yeah. It's impressive. The lines that they can spot like during the moment.
Yeah.
That's what I noticed. And what I always struggled with National Enduro and GNCC was the ability to, let's say, pick, not, I don't want to say pick your lines, but pick the best line and be able to pick it constantly as the race is changing and as it's going on. And I think it's everything to just with your surroundings, knowing your surroundings. And that goes in all disciplines. Those top guys are just extremely good at it.
Yeah, definitely. I had a little class on line selection a couple weeks ago. My buddy was like, he's like, don't always take the hardest line. And I was like, okay, to be fair, I thought that this is the easy line. I didn't realize that the rock was going to move and I was going to fall into a hole. So I thought it was going to be easy versus like going around and taking like a sharp right and coming back. I was like trying to go straight over just what looked like a couple little rocks. So
yeah, I tell guys I work with all the time training here in Minnesota, you know, let's say our trail ranges from 4 to 6 feet usually. The established trail is going to be this wide. You know, our tires are this wide, but we have, you know, 4, 5, 6 feet to work with. If your tire's 2, 3 inches wide, there are plenty of areas you can go to find smooth lines. So I've been trying to help my guys find those smooth lines. So that's a big thing we always focus on.
Yeah. How did you get into the coaching?
Back in 2017 or 2018, it would have been my first year doing kind of some ride schools. And I think Clayton Fine at Fine Tune, I think, is like, hey, let's do a school. You know, you do a riding section where you work with guys and on their technique and stuff. And then he'll do like suspension school at the same time. And then we kind of flop them back and forth. Yeah. And we did that and worked out real well and kind of never stopped from there.
That's cool. And how many people do you typically work with in a season?
It's a lot less now because I kind of changed the format. But those first couple of years, I mean, it was probably 10 to 15 riding schools, and there was 10 per school. So worked with quite a few riders. And the coming years, quite a few of them were repeats, which is really good. Now we've kind of focused it. Last year, we kind of did a spring boot camp. So it was March and April, and the guys come every Saturday and Sunday. And it's not so much focused on, let's say, like a ride school. It's more so kind of like what the guys experience at training facilities down south. We just don't have that set up around here. So we're doing motos, we're doing sprint laps, we're doing different drills. So I got that set up and we're hoping to start this weekend.
Wow. Is it that warm up there already?
It was, I think, 60 something yesterday. Today, the high is mid 40s, and then it's supposed to be 50s or 60s through the end of the weekend. But we can get riding pretty early at my grandpa's place. It's quite a bit of sand there, so we can usually start riding 3 weeks before anywhere else opens in Minnesota.
Wow. So
we're pretty fortunate with that.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I didn't realize it had been that warm up there.
It really hasn't been that warm. We've had a couple nice days, but we usually jump the gun early. There's normally some ice out there. But I tell the guys, I was just getting made fun of this past weekend by Brody O'Connor. He's like, what do you think it's going to be like? I just said, it's going to be good. He says, is it going to be good or is it going to be rideable? And I was like, everything's good. So they usually question me on whether or not it's actually good. But I always tell them it's good.
It's always so good. I mean, if you get any time on the bike, it doesn't matter if you're falling over, if you're covered in mud. I remember a couple of those Tileman weekends where it was just, we were completely drenched and cold. And it's still fun because you're out on your bike.
That's right. Yeah, I remember a day last year, I think it was end of March, we got 3, 4, 5 inches of snow, like just out of the blue. And I was like, we're still training. And so I think like half the guys showed up and we did a bunch of sprint laps in the mud, which was really good. And then we went to do, I think, a 40-minute moto or a 30-minute moto. And I came around on the second lap and like 3 of the 4 guys were stuck on a hill all in different ruts. I was like, all right, it might not be good today, but I still told them it was good. See, sometimes you just got to tell them it's good so they show up.
It's a mindset thing, right?
That's right.
I think definitely. You really have to keep a strong mindset in times like that. Like, I went to a race in North Dakota and I had been training because it was like, I knew there was going to be a lot of logs. And so I was super focused on logs and I didn't factor in weather. I didn't think about it. Like, I never really had much issue with weather when I lived in North Dakota. And all of a sudden I got there and it poured throughout the entire night. And that part of North Dakota is clay. So it was super slick. And I had not mentally prepared for that at all. So it just completely threw me off. And now I'm thinking about, like, I'm doing a race next month in North Carolina, and that is also clay. And so if it rains, which with my luck it will, it's going to be a disaster. But
what race in North Dakota did you go to?
The Schmedium Enduro, the Legends Schmedium Enduro.
Yep. All of North Dakota events are a lot of fun. You wouldn't think they have cool terrain up there, but all their races are held on
some really cool. Yeah, they found some cool spots and they set it up real well. So
yeah, I've been to, I think, 3 of their events. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had fun at all of them. Just a long drive.
Yeah, it is. Well, because I was living in Minot, North Dakota. And I was driving out to Akeley in Minnesota to ride. And that alone was like 7 hours. So, and I was doing that like almost every weekend for a while.
Oh boy.
It was rough. But now I, like, last year I was traveling to races because I was like just going to the hard enduros. And some of them were 8-9 hours, some of them were 12 hours. Like, so driving like 7 hours is kind of like an average now.
Yeah, like, I was talking to somebody on our way home from Oklahoma this past weekend. And he's like, oh, how far you got left? And I think it was like 7.5-8 hours. And yes. He's like, oh, I was like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, that would be so long and so boring. I was like, it's normal, you know, I'm used to it now.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, well, you've been all over the country like me. And last year when I went to that North Dakota race, I was actually living in Tennessee. So I had to drive from Tennessee to northern North Dakota, and it was a 24-hour drive. I did the race, and then so I got there at night, I slept, did the race, and then after the race, like within an hour, I was packed up and headed back home because I had to get home for work.
That's a long drive up there for that.
Yes, it was. But I had been living in North Dakota, and I have been like kind of involved with promoting that race. So like I felt like I had to be there. It was also just an excuse to travel. So
Oh yeah,
and
I did that
I wanted to
race
try
2 years
something
ago.
different. Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time. I This year, like I said, I'll be going to North Carolina for a race. That'll probably be my longest drive for a race, but I'm staying for longer than one day, so
What race are you
it'll
going
make it
to?
worth it. Battle of the Goats. It's one of the hard enduros. It's the first one in the East Coast series. So
They hold that probably, I guess, I don't know where, but right outside of Asheville. Does that sound
yeah.
right? In those mountains?
So it's in Taylorsville. Yeah, it's not too far, but yeah, Brushy Mountain. Yeah. I rode out there a lot this, well, in the last, what was it, 4 or 5 months ago. And I really love it out there. It's really challenging. But it's a lot of fun, and I feel comfortable with East Coast riding versus like West Coast. So everything West Coast is like super exposure and a lot of rocks, and I don't mind rocks, but the exposure is what's getting me and really messing with my head. So there's it's like a little bit of exposure in Brushy Mountain, but there's so many trees that it like kind of makes you feel protected. I don't know. It's definitely a mental thing. And I'm trying to get over it. I've been going to California. I just went to Utah, and I'm really pushing myself on those exposure situations so I can just get over that fear and just trust my skills and just be able to do what I need to do on the bike. So,
Awesome.
yeah,
How far is
I'm
the drive
pushing
for you?
for North
To
Carolina.
the, yep.
I think it's 37 hours from here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite
That's
a
a
drive.
trip.
And I haven't found anybody who wants to drive it with me, so I'm gonna be doing it solo again. So,
That would be a tough one.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, no, I'm like, dude, I will take your bike for you. I will pay for you to race the race. Like, just come with me. And they're like, no, I'm not doing it. Dang it.
The drive out there is not so bad. It's the drive home.
Yeah, that's what's gonna suck. I've given myself like 2 days after the race to get back because I know I can drive it probably straight through, but after doing the race, I'm probably gonna be really beat up. So giving myself some time to just crawl back and then be able to work after getting some rest. So
Yep, that's probably a good plan.
yeah, but it'll be really fun, but trying to get into hard enduro with the limited seat time that I have, it's kind of crazy, like I said, but it's what I've wanted to do for a really long time. So I really had to change my mindset and really not let any kind of negativity in at all. I changed who I was riding with. I changed where I was living, obviously. And I've even changed how I approach things. And when I get to an obstacle and I'm nervous about it, or I'm not 100% sure I have the skill to do it, I don't say what's the worst that could happen like everybody else does. I now say what's the best that could happen, because that split second on the trail of envisioning myself falling down the cliff or not making it up the obstacle, like that makes a difference, especially when you're as you're approaching it and you're, not stopping. It makes a huge difference for me, and I've been able to get over most obstacles and through most things so far since I changed that little bit even.
Mindset plays a huge role in everything.
Yeah. How do you like get prepared mindset wise for a race? Like, is there any tips that you have for getting ready for that?
not, I don't have too many tips for it, because I'm not really like the motivational speaker type.
No,
But what I can say is what's helped my mindset is going into events knowing that I've done what was necessary to be prepared. And so whether that's like the consistent diet leading up, you know you're hydrating, you know you've been working out, you know you've been riding, you know. That's I think that's what's kind of helped me just locally here the past few years is I knew I was doing more than anybody else. So that I mean that plays a huge role there. If you know you're doing more than everybody else, you know where you should be. So you have to build that mindset and build that confidence through actually putting in the work and having the discipline, doing the things that are not fun. Like trying, when I try to get guys to go out, hey, let's go do a 30 or let's go do a 40 or an hour moto or whatever it is. And guys are like, oh, you know, that's hard or it's hot out. And it's just like, just do it and you'll be thankful after, you know? So I think that's what builds that mindset. Entering a race knowing that you can accomplish something is you've put in the work, you've done this, you know this works, and just kind of stick to that.
I like
But
that.
I'm not so much on being the kind of person that says, oh, I know I can do this. But then in the back of your head, you're like, well, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, you know, just. I'm just put in the work and then, you know, the mindset will follow.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I definitely feel like that does separate a lot of people, like knowing that you put in that work, because there are people who are like, oh, I just go out and I race, and that's great. And a lot of them do really well. But again, it kind of, for me personally, like, I wouldn't be able to just go do that, because like I'm not trying to win. I don't have any delusions of grandeur like that. I just want to make it. Like for this first hard enduro, I've never done one before, and I'm still pretty new to like any kind of hard riding at all. So my goal is just to make one checkpoint. If I get to that checkpoint, I'm obviously going to push and keep going. But if I make one checkpoint and that's it, I will be the happiest person in the world. But the fact that I'm doing it, like when I'm there on the starting line, like that's already a dream come true for me to like make it to that point, when a lot of people told me I would never be able to do it because I'm so small, and because I'm a girl, like girls don't do hard enduro, and like, you know, all this dumb stuff. And it's just like I've pushed really hard, and I'm the poster child for probably who shouldn't be doing hard enduro at all, because I don't have all of the skills that are required. And you know, I know I'm gonna struggle, and it's gonna be really, really hard, but I don't care. Like that's I've got to start somewhere. So
Embrace the struggle.
yeah, exactly. And why not start now? So, and I've done a couple hair scr or one hair scramble. I've done a couple enduros. I did the sh medium enduro, but that's all the racing I have under my belt, like in 2 years. So,
Yeah,
like it's
I was having a
quite a trip.
conversation with a kid who went to Oklahoma with me this past weekend. It was really our first time hanging out, and he's like, oh, he was telling me, I really hope to, you know, maybe get a win this year, you know, a couple podiums. And I said, I kind of looked at him because I'm kind of that guy guy's like, you know, shoot for the stars. And I tell him, who else is going to be training, like actually devoting their time to training this spring that you are racing against? And he says, nobody. And I was like, who do you think you're racing against that's in the gym constantly training for racing? He says nobody. And I was like, all right, who's riding with a purpose to improve and get to be next year that you're racing against this year? And he's like, probably nobody. I said, all right, and you are. Why don't you think you're going to win every single race then? And he's like, well, I was like, you got to change that mindset. You're doing stuff that they are not. That's going to put you light years ahead. So I think that kind of put a stamp on it. And he's like, it's going to be a good year. So it'll be fun.
That's awesome. I love that. That's so cool. And the thing for me personally is like there's not a lot of women who race hard enduro. So a lot of people keep telling me they're like, you could podium, you could podium. I'm like, all right, there's not a lot of women who do it, but the women who do it are badass. So I don't envision a podium. But if it happens, oh my God, everyone in the world's gonna hear about it
It's
because
gonna be on Fox
like,
News or CNN.
oh, it'll be everywhere.
There you go.
But I mean, I am putting in a lot of work, but I'm also starting from like below ground zero. You know, I've had to build up because I'm so new. Getting this bike, it really set me back because I couldn't touch the ground and I was too stubborn to lower it for the first year. So I've been riding with it lowered for like 2 months now, and it's made a huge difference. So makes a
You're
difference
on
because I get stuck on rocks more, but
a Which bike are you on? Husqvarna,
yep,
right?
T300, yeah.
300. How do you like that?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I rode a bunch of different bikes before I decided to buy this one. And like if anyone would let me try their bike, I would try it. But yeah, this was just the best one. Like for me, I liked the throttle response on it. I liked the balance on it. It's heavier than like a lot of people were telling me to get the Beta Cross Trainer. But I didn't like it. It felt really laggy, and I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Maybe it was just the couple that I rode, but they're almost like clunky. And even though it's like a smaller bike, and everyone was like, "Well, you're small, so you shouldn't be getting like a truly full size bike," I was like, "I'm gonna get what I want to get," and so I did. And everyone was
Thank you
just
made a
like,
good decision.
"Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it." And I mean, I've had to figure a lot of things out, but I think it's really challenged me to focus on my form and focus on my body positioning, because that makes a huge, huge difference. Because I am so small on such a big bike, even with it being lowered, I still have a hard time touching the ground. And you know, I still am a teeny tiny person on a full size bike. So my friend was telling me, he's like, dude, you've got to stand up when you're going up hills. And I was like, I am standing up, actually. I just don't look like it because my butt's like this high off of the seat.
It takes greater commitment when you're shorter to get through the obstacles.
And I've really had to learn how to move on the bike. As Jarvis calls it, like bike yoga. Like that's really what it feels like. And I had a friend tell me, he's like, dude, it's crazy watching you ride. He's like, sometimes like he's like, where I just put my foot down, you have to like be completely off the bike to do that. And I'm like, yeah, it's really hard. And for someone who comes like I didn't ever do sports and stuff growing up, so like I had no concept of balance. I was the most clumsy person, and like there was no athleticism to me. And so I've really had to overcome that, and I've spent a lot of extra time working on like static balance and lock bar turns and stuff like that to compensate for that, because that's where I see my weaknesses.
Yeah, I'd still tell people about that all the time. Doing balance exercises, in the gym will help you, on the bike as well. Those exercises don't have to be done on the bike for that skill or that ability to transfer. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, doing it like in the gym and like doing it in different movements, like I'm trying to think of mobility exercises. Those are really important because, again, for somebody like me who's small, trying to get off the bike safely when I am crashing, which happens often,
Happens to all of
that's a
us.
bigger feat. You know, I have to jump off of the bike, and like I had an epic dismount this weekend where like my friend caught it at the top of a hill. Like my bike just started going and I like jumped off and I like did a spin, but I stayed standing and I was like, okay, that was kind of cool looking. Like,
Anybody have their camera out? There
yeah, actually we did get it on camera, so
you go.
but yeah, I've been trying to do that rather than falling, and I try to catch my bike, but I would rather let the bike fall than me fall. It's a lot easier to replace parts on bikes, even though it's ridiculously expensive. You know,
Medical bills are more expensive.
exactly. So getting into hard enduro has been a very costly thing. But it's like I
You
said, it for
probably
me.
picked the most expensive discipline to get into.
Yeah, I
Bikes,
picked like
rims.
the most expensive bike, and then I decided to go beat it up, and now I'm paying expensive or for super expensive parts and like but I absolutely love it and I will continue to do it. I'm super fortunate that I make enough money to be able to do it and to be able to afford all of this.
Yeah. As long as you got that under control, you're good, and then just focus on having fun.
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing is I am the happiest person in the world when I'm on my bike. I may be struggling. I thought I broke my toe this weekend on the trail, and I was just like almost crying, and I'd never cry for like injuries and stuff. And I was like, I told the guys behind me, I was like, I need to sit down. Like, I legitimately cannot put pressure on my foot right now. Like, I can't bear weight on it at all. I don't know how I'm gonna get down off of this mountain, but I was like, I will figure it out. And then like 10 minutes later, we started going down. And even though my foot was like in so much pain, I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, look what I'm doing right now. Like, this is gorgeous area and like it's absolutely amazing. And I was like, I really hope my foot's not broken so I could keep riding tomorrow.
Yeah, I always thought about that when we went to Oklahoma, or not Oklahoma, Montana.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like you can get out into areas, and I'm sure snowmobilers feel the same way. But you get out into areas that you're never going to hike to them. We're
Yeah.
30 miles from the road, or
Yeah.
25 miles across this mountain range, and it's just like this has probably been untouched by everybody, but maybe a couple hunters or dirt bikers or snowmobilers or people on side
Yeah.
by sides. They just take you places where, most people don't go.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a huge thing that resonates with people in the off-road community is that you get that like freedom, right? Like you get to do amazing things like go those places. And when I'm on top of a mountain or, you know, I mean the little baby mountains that I've been on so far, because I'm still figuring out exposure. It's still like it's that you're on top of the world feeling. And I don't think there's anything better. I think that's it gives me confidence and it just makes me so ridiculously happy.
It's cool.
Yeah. So I always want to like share that experience, and that's kind of what this podcast was born of, is sharing the experience and giving it to people who you know, giving inspiration rather to people who may not have seen it, may not have heard these stories before, and just kind of hopefully inspiring somebody in some way, shape, or form, whether it's to try a different discipline than what they're used to, or to get a dirt bike in general. We've had several people who listen to this podcast who were not dirt bikers who have gone out and purchased bikes now and have started getting into it. So I think
That's
it's
awesome.
super cool. Yeah.
I'm always trying to get people on dirt bikes.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever it takes to get somebody on a bike and help them with whatever I can.
Yeah.
Love
I do the
the sport.
same. Yeah, it's all about being supportive, and like for me a big part of it is being super supportive to women because women don't always get the same opportunities that guys get to go on rides and things like that, because a lot of the times we see ourselves as the slow ones and holding up the group and things like that. So, you know, it's harder to get seat time for a lot of women, not all women, but a lot of women. And so finding supportive people is really important. And that goes for everybody, though. Finding people who you can learn from and really that can push you if that's what you're into. If you want to be a racer, they can help you with, you know, skills for that. I think that's super, super important. So
I remember when we were younger, my dad always tells story real well, but we had a big, I don't want to call it a camp. It's not your traditional camper, but it was like you could walk through the entire camper. And so we could learn. There was one race, I think I had 5 or 6 buddies from school come with to race. None of them have ever raced before.
So wow.
We have a strong history of getting people to go racing that have never been racing. So he always enjoys telling that story about how, you know, we had so many kids with us and we were able to organize all the minor releases for them to all race because their parents weren't with. And so
that's really cool. That's awesome that your dad was able to do that. That's something that a lot of people wouldn't do.
Yeah. I don't think there was a single event that year that we didn't bring somebody that isn't part of the racing community racing.
Yeah.
So we had full weekends with bringing people racing.
That's really amazing. Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wish I could do something like that. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to bring people across the country to go race in North Carolina.
It is a lot easier in school. It's like, oh, you got a dirt bike? Why don't you come racing with us? You know?
And yeah. Then
as you're 12 years old, 13 years old, or 14, however old we were, be like, all right, how are we going to convince your parents to let you come
with? Yeah. And now it's work. It's always, oh, I've got to work, or I can't get time off of work. And we grew up. What happened?
That's right. We have responsibilities now.
I know. It's kind of terrible. I mean, it's great, but it's also terrible. Mm-hmm. It allows us to pay for the things that we want to do, but then we have to work. So
that's right.
But so how do people get started with you for training? Like, is that something like people can just enroll for, or are you pretty selective? Out.
Oh, okay. Just reach out. With what we're doing now, it's not so. I'll still do normal riding schools, let's say on the weekends before we start our training with our group each day. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you want to join the group, just reach out. I mean, I'm not going to be selective, but I'm going to let you know that it's not designed to come here and have fun. You're coming here to improve. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have fun when you win races. So that's kind of the way I just let people know, you know,
yeah. It's,
we're here to put in the work and then, you know, you can have fun after.
Yeah.
So as long as they understand that, that's kind of my only requirement.
Cool. I get that. Definitely.
A lot of it has to do with me having the people to train with. Because I went 5-6 years of doing it by myself. You know, you'd go to the track and just do motos by yourself. And I don't want to say I got burned out, but I got burned out of doing it solo. So this is kind of my way of, you know, to keep me training, keep me, you know, on that track. And so get other people there, and it pushes me and it pushes them. And so that was kind of the whole thought behind it.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's really important to have that kind of community, whether it's people that you've known long term or people who show up for just one of those. You know, I've got a group of guys now who they're all a lot better riders than I am, but they're really patient and they're very supportive and they push hard and they encourage me to push hard. They encourage me to push through my comfort zone. And I encourage them too when we're out on the trail and they're like looking at something. I'm like, you got this, go do it. And they're like, all right, cool. And then they go do it. You know, so we all just push each other. And I think that that's really important. Doesn't matter the discipline. If you have people who support you and push you, you're going to go so much further than if you're doing it alone. Because I do a lot of riding and a lot of training alone. And for the stuff that I'm doing, it's not so safe because I come out in the mountain or, you know, whatever. So I keep it to training versus pushing myself. I'm not trying to do new obstacles or anything like that. When I'm by myself, I'm doing, you know, like a small loop, I'm sessioning one part of a hill or something like that. Something that's pretty safe, but still helping me improve. So
nope. Better play it safe if you're out on the mountain by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So, And this isn't like a well-traveled area. So like if I go down and I'm stuck under my bike, it could potentially be days before somebody goes up there. So it's like I carry a little GPS thing that's got an SOS on it. So I can, you know, if that happens, I can get help out to me. But I always like to put that out there because I had someone freak out one time and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you're being so unsafe and you're promoting that. I'm like, I wouldn't tell anybody else to go and do that just, you know, on a daily. Like there's a little girl that I'm helping. She's just learning how to ride. And, you know, I'm kind of helping teach her the basics and stuff. And I told her, I was like, do not go off of the dirt roads. And I would prefer you not go out by yourself, but that's up to your mother. Like, you know, and her mom have established what she can and can't do by herself. And then when she goes out with me, she's kind of, her mom is fine with me taking her on whatever, but I'm also going to tailor it to her skill level and what her bike can make it through. So it's cool though, because helping somebody like that, I mean, I'm not a coach. I'm not good enough to coach. I'm not any of that, but I can help her get comfortable. I can help her get through things, you know, as we're on the trail. So, and that's what I'm going to do is just, you know, like you said, it's one more person. So
you're getting her the exposure that she probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the amount of time that we're going to be able to ride together, she and I think her mom are going to be here for a few months. And so I'm here and might as well. I'm going to be going out anyway. So
gives you somebody to ride with as well.
Exactly. She may not be doing the same stuff, but she'll be. At least she'll be exposed to it. And I told her, you don't have to do the riding that I do. If we go out a few times and you don't like the stuff that I'm doing, that's not the only way to ride a dirt bike. I was like, there's so many different ways to ride bikes and so many disciplines. And I was like, well, we can figure out what works for you because you might not like what I do. So
that's right.
And I think that that's really important too. Like I'm not a big motocross person, but if she wants to go to a track, I'll help figure out, you know, a track around here and get her out there and I'll go support her. Like, I think support in general is the most important thing to keep people in the sport and like in off-road. So
it is.
Yeah. I love it. Well, if you could give a very quick word of advice to somebody who's new to dirt biking, what would be your best advice?
Oh, put me on the spot here. Let's see here. If you're gonna race and you have a goal, discipline goes a lot further than motivation. And if you're going out there to trail ride, have fun. I would just say go everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy the experience because not everybody gets to, not everybody will ever have the opportunity to get a bike. They might not realize how cool it is. So, I mean, if you've made it to the point of getting a bike, you know, get out there and enjoy the experience.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of my answer on the spot.
No, that's great. I love it. Awesome. Well, then in the last couple of minutes here, this is your time for any shout outs or thank yous that you want to give.
Oh, thank you to everybody who's ever supported me in my racing. My parents when I was younger, fine-tuned suspension. He's always been a massive help for many years. Mm-hmm. This year we got Red River on board. We got Climb, Triumph. Those are kind of the big ones.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for taking time. I know this was kind of crazy to set up, but it worked out finally.
Last minute. So. It's all right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I hope you have a good one. I'll hit you up when I get back to Minnesota.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you.
All right. Bye.